people, you know? I'm like, wow, like, that concept of helping people, stoicism, like, teaches, like, you know, like how to be strong in tough times. That's an ism, you know? Christianity or Buddhism. I mean, they're all religions. Veganism is a certain religion, you know? It's believing in something, you know?
Right from wrong. Well, yeah, I mean, just the winning streak.
Yeah.
That's like, I'm super pumped that we're meeting, but like, if we never met and like, I got my little Instagram bot that like unfollows people and I like unfollowed you, I forgot about Charlie, I'm gonna be saying winning streak for the rest of my life, right? And that's big.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Absolutely.
Because you're creating things that are bigger than yourself. And now you got the abundance bell, so is this new or did I just not pay attention?
The abundance bell started when I wanted to book speaking engagements. And nobody was booking me because they thought I was too hip-hop or too goofy. They're like, well, is he going to relate to my business audience? Mm-hmm. Or is he going to relate to my employees? He's too crazy. He's too goofy. Or he's too hip-hop. Sounds like he's black sometimes. And they're like, yeah, I would never get booked. So I said, you know what? I'm going to buy a bell. And I'm going to ring it, and I'm going to call the abundance bell, and every time I get booked for speaking engagements, I'm going to ring the abundance bell. And then they started coming in, and all of a sudden, people believe in me as a speaker.
Ring it.
Boom. Preach. Oh, that's dope. I feel like half the podcast is already over.
We've been recording.
Dropping jewels, man. This is the same thing happened. Do you know who Roberto Blake is? He's a big YouTuber. I don't know, he got like half a million on YouTube. Mm. And
it's not easy.
No, YouTube's a different game. It's hard. Yeah, YouTube's a different game. And yeah, he's spoken at like VidCon and a lot of big YouTube conferences and stuff. And how much of that podcast? We were just walking, like it was crazy. Like, jewels were just... And I was like, yo, can we please hit record? And then we literally, like, got kicked out the place we were supposed to do the podcast by the time... We only got technically 5 minutes into the real podcast. And then we got kicked out of that venue. We had to go to Marriott.
Yeah, here hustling, bro. I love it. Bro, you're at 1208 hustling your podcast, bro. That's so dope to me, bro. Dude,
it's amazing.
That's how you do it, bro. It reminds me of the music game. We would do anything to just, man, I would stay up in the studio trying to get a feature from somebody for like to 8 a.m. and they're like, come on, please just get to my beat, please. And I would sit there and it would always pay off.
Well, and that's so.
Damn.
So I was talking to China Mac, and I was telling him, you know, I went to jail for a short period of time, and I started reading books, and I read Russell Simmons' book, and Russell Simmons talks about how he gave his record out in the 80s. Mm-hmm. There was no iTunes, there was no Napster, there was no Spotify, but he would physically go to the DJs and give them the record and say, hey, play this, hey, play this. And at that time, nobody heard of Def Jam. Nobody heard of it. So the record stores would never buy from Def Jam. Who the hell is Def Jam? And then they start playing in the clubs, and then the people started requesting. The people started going to the record store, hey, you got the new Def Jam? You got the new Run DMC?
Absolutely.
And then he said, give it away for free
until
people can't live without it.
That's what we did too. Passed out. We would drop a mixtape. I would pass out. I mean, it costs us about 40 cents per mixtape. So if I passed out $150,000, I mean, I'm spending, you know, a lot of money. We would reinvest our show money back into pressing out mixtapes because we saw a direct correlation to passing out CDs to making money. So we were giving away all the music to make the show money. And I would pass out CDs and people were like, Charlie, I have 8 copies already. Give it to a friend. Like, I'm going to beat you upside the head. And it worked every time. Never failed. To this day, if I was still in the music industry, I would still pass out CDs, even though CDs are antiquated. You know why? It's the only one-step method to getting your music listened to by a fan. 90% of the cars still have CD players. You know, brand new cars don't. But most of us have CD players in our car. Mm-hmm. We don't use CDs. But it's handing somebody a flyer and making them go through two or three steps. No, somebody's leaving a club. They could do one step and hear the music.
So it's interesting because your brand, your mixing, you're part of many people who are mixing hip-hop and entrepreneurship, and mm-hmm. I think that's so important because those roads need to path. Those messages need to path. The messages from entrepreneurship need to go into hip-hop, absolutely. To the hip-hop community, all those listeners, and we also need to make entrepreneurship cool.
So, hip-hop. Let's actually rewind. The biggest genre to ever exist in the history of the world was pop music. 49% market share. 2019, hip-hop has 70% market share. We're talking about rock, pop, and country added up and combined do not add up to how big hip-hop is. And if you go back 30 years ago, 20, 15, 10, 5 years ago, and asked anybody, would hip-hop be able to be the biggest genre in the world? 100 out of 100 would have said, absolutely not. It can never be bigger than pop or rock. Hip-hop broke every rule and didn't win by a little margin. We're talking about the biggest landslide difference any music genre has had in the history of the world. Nobody would have guessed it, predicted it, or said it was possible. And we broke every rule, and nobody is studying how we did it. We're still studying only Gary Vaynerchuk and Tony Robbins. If you take the musicians of the world who are the richest in the world, you've got the richest musicians. Now, there's a lot of white ones, too, but they're nowhere near the black ones. Diddy, Jay-Z, Dr. Dre, Birdman. Like, we're talking about prolific businessmen. And there's not books written about how they do it. Like, we're talking about Apple Music bought Beats by Dre. But we're not studying Dr. Dre. We're still studying the same people we've always studied. Why aren't we studying this thing that's right in front of our eyes that has the biggest domination? It's like Jeff Bezos-style domination. We'll study Jeff Bezos, but we won't study how hip-hop does business. Hostile takeover. And nobody's studying how we do it. It is yet to be translated in the business community.
Well, and a lot of the people that you mentioned, they build brands. Brands that are so big, so much bigger than themselves, so much bigger than even music, right? Diddy's doing alcohol. He's doing clothing. He's doing high-end clothing that has nothing to do with music. People that have never listened to his music are wearing his clothing. You know, people that would never listen to one of his songs are drinking his alcohol.
You know what America's biggest export is?
What?
Culture. We export culture worldwide. We influence the entire world with the way we talk, with the way we dress, with how we sound. And who creates culture? The rebels. Hip-hop is the rebels of America, but America is birthed in rebellion. I can predict most of the time who's going to be the president.
The most rebellious.
You take a John Kerry, very buttoned up, versus a cowboy, George Bush. You take
he's messing up words, he's messing up sentences.
Then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you take Obama, who's black, going up against Mitt Romney, buttoned up.
He looked like Reagan.
But Reagan, you know why Reagan won?
Reagan was
a Hollywood actor. American. John F. Kennedy. Damn near a model. Like we never had a young, good-looking president until JFK.
Had Marilyn Monroe in the White House singing to him.
It's American. It's American to break the rules. Mm. That's why hip-hop, when I look at something that doesn't make sense, I say that has the opportunity to be the biggest thing in the world. So, safe is dangerous. And if you look at me, I just did a speaking engagement. I'm the only one in a tracksuit.
Yep.
People see me on stage, they're like, what's this kid gonna talk about? I might leave. Nobody knows that times are changing in this industry that we're in, because nobody's broken the rules in this industry that we're in. The way they've broken the rules in the past is just by adding cuss words. That's the only rule that was broken in this entire industry of motivation and self-help. Just start cussing and you're a rebel? No. There's an uprising of realness coming, of being ourselves, and there's a new day of the cool kids who are the success stories. Just like hip-hop. Nobody's studying hip-hop yet, but they will. There will be books, there will be movies, and we will study it just like how we study Tony Robbins. Just like in politics. We don't want politicians anymore. In the self-help space, we're not going to want self-help people anymore. Let me learn from Virgil. I want to study Virgil, who started Off-White. Let me study Jerry Lorenzo, who created Fear of God. Let me study alternative people, not just teachers. Let me study people who are doing something in real life. Let me study somebody who doesn't have the perfect body language, like Mitt Romney or a motivational speaker.
Or Hillary Clinton.
The robotic, the same script, the same TED Talk style. Like people read a book and say, this is how you be just like the TED speakers. And then you just create a lot of robots. Or in the personal brand space, here's how to create a video with a title and then, you know, what every 20-year-old should hear. Everybody looks the same. Everybody acts the same.
And in a world, in a world where everyone's the same, we look up to the rebels.
That's why the rebels, who everybody is doubting, are the ones who change everything.
And that's honestly why we started our company Disrupt, and why we called our company Disrupt, was to be the people who have the courage to interpret injustices in the world and raise their hand, right? Because how many kids, when they were going to school, the teacher would say something incorrect and everybody was scared to question the teacher?
Absolutely.
And now we have people in hip-hop, we have people in music, and these worlds are kind of colliding. And I was telling you on the way over here about China Mac. So China Mac did 10 years in prison. He came home, he read Gary Vee's book in jail, didn't know what the internet was. AOL was out back then. He didn't know what was coming for him.
Wow.
And came out, read Crush It, and started crushing it. And he just did an interview with Gary Vee this week.
That's great. Good for him.
And he told Gary, like, your book changed my life. I came out, I started applying these principles.
Yes.
And he's up to 150,000 subscribers on Instagram. Winning.
He's on the winning streak.
He has been interviewed on Vlad TV. He's going on No Jumper next week. And he's crushing, he's killing it. And he's still on parole. Wow. He's still on parole. He has to send a letter to the parole office and say, hey, I gotta go do this podcast in LA. We're having him come to Puerto Rico. We're sending a letter. You gotta come down to Puerto Rico.
He deserves it.
He deserves it. He's working.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing with his brand, the reason I brought him up, is he's doing a little bit of both. So he has his music, he has his mixtapes, he has his music videos that are coming out. But he's also talking to the people. He also has a show on YouTube where he goes to all the hood food spots, all the chicken spots, all the bodegas, the empanada spots, the really good food all around New York. And he goes there and eats. And this show, it looks like it should be on the Food Network. It looks professionally produced.
That's cool.
And it's just him and his homie and a camera. And he's his authentic self.
Yes.
He's not trying to be Anthony Bourdain.
Right.
He's his authentic yes. hood self. And then he goes with rappers. He's interviewed Jadakiss. He's interviewed a lot of predominant people in the game. And he goes all around the neighborhoods and he shows this. And in 18 months, I know guys that have been doing this for 18 years.
Yes.
10 years.
Yes.
And they still not where he's been able to achieve it. Only 18 months and he's been home. And
I want to learn from him. Seriously. That's real. Inspiration to me. I love learning from alternative sources. That story inspires me.
Well, and the crazy thing is, you know, I mentioned how he read Gary Vee's book, but Gary Vee didn't even know that. Mm-hmm. And Gary Vee reached out to him because Gary saw this and was like, I want to learn from him. Right. What is he doing? Because he just went like this.
Yeah.
Right? And the thing is, a lot of people would say, don't look at him. Oh, he has a criminal background.
Nah,
he's
man.
This, he's that. Yeah.
It's genius is found in all, like I'm constantly a student because what I've seen coming from hip hop is the person who you least expect is going to probably replace you, or you can work with the least expected people and it'll change your life. I'll tell you a story. So early Travis Porter days, it was my first group. And I would get these songs mixed. And there was this kid who charged me $50 to mix a record. And it was a good mix. I go to this studio. He said, meet me here. I was like, all right. It was a rough part of town. Mm-hmm. He comes outside. And I saw this terrible, like, painful look on his face. That's a good kid. But he's like, something told me, like, wow, I was going to hand him, like, $200 for the mixes. It's like, something told me to give you a few more bucks because I see some sort of pain. I said, are you okay? Gave him, like, $500 or something. He's like, man, I'm going through it. He said, man, I'm, like, I'm homeless. I'm living in a studio, like, on the couch in this recording studio. And I was like, man. He's like, yeah, I just can't get work. I was like, you know what, I'll give you a job. Give you a job, you'll be Travis Porter's engineer. Next day we went to Guitar Center, bought a little studio set up, my mom's basement. I was a little cheap at the time. I was
making like, it work.
Recording studios aren't, the equipment doesn't make hits, artists do. So it's like we had like speakers set up on like little mini trash cans we flipped upside down. He's like, but he's an expert. He knows this stuff, he's just homeless. And one day, he brought a keyboard to the studio. And it was a big keyboard. Like, 88 keys. Like, I'm like, what you got a keyboard for? Because he's your engineer. Like, yeah. So we're like, kind of like hazing him a little bit. Like, he's the rookie on the team. And he's like, you know, I kind of make beats. I'm like, man, you can't make no beat, man. You know? He made a beat. And it was just like, whoa, that beat he made ended up being my first top 10 record in the country. He made another beat, that record became another top 10 record in the country. And he made another beat, that record became the number 2 song in the country. Then he went on to discover Post Malone. And he signed Post Malone. He discovered Post Malone, signed him. Now he's one of the best in the entire game. And that guy was homeless. Bro, there's genius everywhere. We gotta stop looking only up to the mentors up there who are successful. There's a guy who changed my life forever that was homeless, sleeping on a couch. You gotta look for genius everywhere.
Well, and you had the compassion, the empathy, the foresight, whatever you want to call it, the courage to look for the genius in him. Right? Where a lot of people might have written him off to empower him. Right? A lot of people might have even if they didn't write him off, they might have tried to hold him down. Oh, you down? All right, let me keep you. Let me keep you down there.
Yeah, man. My business partner's couch begging up to sign with us. This was 11, 12 years ago. And nobody wanted to sign Rich the Kid. His name back then wasn't even Rich the Kid. It was Black Boy the Kid. And it's just like, he was just like this kid who's just like, not real talented. or like he wasn't a superstar. It's just like, yeah, man, just, you know, we'll support you, but we're not going to sign you. You know, it's like, we'll help you out. My business partner put him in the studio. He made a mixtape called Peter Pan Fly. It's just like a little brother. Like, just go, just, yeah, whatever. Like,
go ahead, Juju. Like, yeah.
And he went on, and I remember I woke up one day, and I'm like, he's skateboarding with Lil Wayne on YouTube. I didn't even know you skateboarded. How did you get around Lil Wayne? And then one day I see he's hanging out with the Migos and has songs with the Migos. And I'm like, how did you do this? And then I see he has a song with Yo Gotti and Nicki Minaj. And then I'm like, then he got a feature with Kendrick Lamar before 2 Chainz did. I'm like, how did you get a feature with Kendrick Lamar? And he had this will to weave and just like sliver between cracks. And he would always find his way, like how he found his way on my business partner's couch. Mm-hmm. He found his way in a studio with Kendrick Lamar or in a skating park with Lil Wayne. And he just found his little way of hustle that's inspiration to me. And I'm like, he had a bigger year last year than 2 Chainz did. He had more, you know, top spins, 10 records than 2 Chainz. And I'm like, wow, the kid who was sleeping on my business partner's couch makes more money than me.
Yeah.
That's inspiration. He makes more money than I make. And we doubted him. You know, I'm not always right.
Yeah.
But sure. I love the story that exists because it's like, he made it. And that, I tap into that inspiration. And I say every day, anybody can make it. There was a guy who interviewed me a second ago at the conference. And he was like, can I interview? And I was like, of course. He said, pulled out his cell phone. He said, I'm here with. He said, what's your name again? And I said, cut it off. Like, and I said, okay, listen. You have to like talk to me before you interview me so you at least know my name and what questions to ask. And then this guy walked up to me. Another guy walked up to me afterwards. He said, that guy's a little annoying, isn't he? And I said, look. What I've seen in my life, anybody can get it. That guy can be Joe Rogan. He completely screwed up the interview. He completely has no idea what he's doing. But what I've seen in my life, that guy can be Joe Rogan. I've seen it before hundreds of times. I mean, they said the same thing about Drake. Jimmy in the wheelchair, light skin, be a rapper? Impossible. There's never been an actor become a rapper like it successfully. Like, he's soft. We know him from Degrassi. Well, he just happens to be the biggest artist of our generation. Anybody can get it. Anybody. And that's what inspires me. I walk into a room. Every single person doubts me if they don't know my story. I also know I'm going to be the biggest whoever's done it. Because anybody can get it.
Well, what do you think that is? What is that 1% that makes Drake from Degrassi become the Drake that we know today?
Well,
that becomes, that takes, what was he called? Black boy?
Black boy the kid.
Black boy the kid and turns him into a rich boy. Like, what's that 1% differentiator?
What I loved about Drake is when he walked away from acting, which was an amazing career he had for himself, he literally walked away and said, no more. I'm putting everything, I got all my eggs, and there ain't no plan B. This A's gotta work. That's it. When I walked away from music and said, I'm gonna be an athlete, I told my business partners, I don't want you to buy me out. I'm giving you my shares. I didn't ask for a buyout. I said, I'm going to be an athlete, put all my eggs in that basket. I don't want to still own some of this company. I want a whole new life. And I'm going to put everything I can into it at all costs. And it took me a year and 3 months to get booked as a speaker. Nobody wanted to book me as a speaker. And it was like, yeah, I just got to keep going. Like, one day they'll wake up, and I'll go from worst to first. But I'm all in. Like, I believe delusionally. I'm delusionally optimistic. Like, I know what the finish line looks like. Like, living in the past is not good. Like, Andre 3000 said, My spaceship don't come equipped with rear view mirrors, we dip. I'm like, my spaceship doesn't have a rear view mirror either. I'm not looking back. I'm going that way. Living in the present is good. I like to be present, but in the present, there's a lot of gravity and there's a lot of things that go wrong. So I don't exactly like being here. I want to be in the future where my imagination is painting the finish line and I'm living at the finish line today. I'm operating like the biggest in the world today because I'm there and I know what it looks like. I know it's done. I know it's mine and I'm living delusionally at the finish line. And I think that's what the most successful people in the world do. Rich kid was told no for 10 years by everybody, including me, including QC, the record label. But he was around them. They wouldn't sign him. Mm-hmm. He was around them for 3-4 years. No, nobody would actually sign him. Nobody wanted anything to do with them. And then he goes and gets New Freezer. And then boom, top 10 record. Then he gets Plug Walk, number one record. Like, damn, he's bigger than us. That's inspiration. But he didn't give up on that finish line. He knew he was going to be dope. Even when no... This is the thing about a dream. Like, a dream that's crazy, you got to go into it knowing I'm alone. You go into that dream knowing I'm alone. I don't need validation. I actually don't want validation. I have to believe enough for all of us. If a lot of people are believing in my dream at the beginning, it's probably not crazy enough. And I go into it alone. Nobody, I write in this, I'm gonna be a Nike athlete. Nobody was gonna believe it. I believed it. That's all that I needed. I just needed me. I didn't need anybody else. I'm gonna be in a commercial with LeBron and Serena. How you gonna do that? Well, you're trying to use logic. I'm not using logic. I'm living at my finish line. I know what it looks like. I believe bigger. I know I'm connected to my dream and everything I want. That's why I'm in a commercial with LeBron and Serena. I can't make this up. I got the pages in the notebook from a year and a half ago.
You made the decision. And that's something that I tell a lot of friends and colleagues that want to make big changes in their life. You decided, I want to be in a commercial with LeBron. Mm-hmm. I don't know how. The how, we're going to figure that out along the way. But this is my destination. Mm-hmm. I made the decision that that's where we're going. Mm-hmm. I might have to make 5 pivots along the way. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to get there.
500. It doesn't matter. We're going to pivot for 10 years if we have to. You know, we're going to shoot a shot of brick. I'm going to hit it eventually. And once I hit it, game on. Once I find that sweet spot, game on.
So I've been following you for a long time. You are a very positive personality. But I know that social media and anxiety can sometimes get the best of everybody. So, like, what's some things that you struggle with in building your brand and doing what you've been doing?
My biggest thing with social media is... I'm facing it right now, for example. Like, I'm a pretty smart businessman, but people don't look at me as a businessman because I won't do a template as a businessman. Like, I'm on social media being goofy. I'm being myself. Like, me and my friends, like my manager or my videographer, Adrian, we act like we're in high school every day because that's the life we wanted to live. We don't want to grow up.
Living your best life.
Absolutely. And I get punished in the business world. Because I can go head-to-head, toe-to-toe with the best businessmen in the world. I know a lot of knowledge of building brands. But I get punished because people aren't used to this. It's like when Whole Foods came around, they said, we're doing organic. But it took 15 years for like Kroger and them to be like, okay, we need to have organic too. Now it's like, if you don't have organic, but Whole Foods knew something 15, 18 years ago that now everybody's just catching up to. Nah, you should eat organic. So it takes a long time to wake folks up that there is something else. So I struggle with it, but I have to stand strong and not conform. If I conformed, I'd make money quicker. I'm trying to get my business off the ground. It's in a rebellious way, but it's true to me. And I'm going to stand strong, and I'm going to open up the door for people to be themselves in the business world or in the teaching world or in the self-help world, that it's okay. It's okay to... Like, we got to stop judging. There's got to stop being a template. Mm-hmm. Like, I walked into a room with this big-time television executive. Powerful lady. She was a black lady. Powerful. She looked at me. She said, "You look like a boy band member. What you want to talk about, Bitcoin?" I said, "What's more powerful than money?" She couldn't answer. I said, "Human lives. That's what I want to talk about." She was blown away. We're great friends now. But it's like, I just look like this because this is the life I want. I wore a suit at one time. I needed to wear a suit at a time to get in the game. But it's like, I wish somebody broke down barriers. Steve Jobs broke down a lot of barriers. You know, Allen Iverson broke down a lot of barriers. Michael Jordan, he had the long shorts. Like, he changed everything. You know, everybody was wearing a little Larry Bird shorts until Michael Jordan came and he wore the long shorts. Like, Allen Iverson had the tattoos and the braids. You know, he made it okay to, you know, and then they tried to ban it by making all the NBA players wear suits. But then they were like, you know what, we messed up by, like, making people, you know, like, let people have identities. And, you know, that's what I want to see in, you know, an industry. I mean, I'm a white male. It's dominated by white males. But I even struggle in it because I won't look, act, or talk like them.
Well, that's the interesting dichotomy that I see, and I see it a lot in tech, business, entrepreneurship, is everyone is all for diversity as long as you don't act diverse.
as long as you don't act diverse. That's right.
You know, like, oh, we want blacks in tech. Well, I have some friends that work in Google.
But act like this.
But yeah, but wear button up, and you got to be a culture fit.
Don't embarrass us.
You need to speak white. You need to act a certain... So you're saying, listen, I'm a white male, but I act urban, and all of a sudden I'm the outcast, right?
I mean, I can't help where I come from. Mm-hmm. Like, I come from hip-hop.
Yeah.
I was raised in a music family. My father was a blues musician. I liked playing basketball growing up. My father's around all black people because mm-hmm. he's a blues musician. I like playing basketball. The white kids in my neighborhood didn't like playing basketball. They like playing baseball. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I can't help where I'm from, but you know what? Look at hip-hop. 70%. It's all possible. And anybody can get it. Rich Kid, Drake, anybody can get it. So I would love to teach people to be more open to the possibilities. And like how we said at the beginning with the presidential thing, if you see somebody breaking some rules, just know that person will probably win. That needs to be the new norm. That's what America is birthed in. Americans left the Church of England in rebellion. It's literally birthed in rebellion.
Uh-huh.
Like, we don't like the way y'all do it. We're going to go do our own thing. Rebellion.
That's our DNA.
Everything we do is kind of stemmed from that. That's why rock and roll was so cool. It was rebellious. Or even Elvis Presley. Like, parents were saying, like, don't watch Elvis because the way he dances. Mm-hmm. Like, it was rebellious. But American icons break rules. And in business, it's catching up. And now we got this information age and we could talk about things like this. And I'm inspired to be able to give this message so that other people, when they're hiring, they're looking for maybe the person who they least expect might be the answer to changing the game. You know, like Michael Jordan changed the game. He changed the way we dress. He had the tongue out, created the biggest shoe of all time, but he got fined every game for the Jordan 1. He got fined.
He's like, I'll take it.
I'll take it. That's where the answers are. Let's go in that direction.
Yeah, deep. So, your brand, where's the goal for you? 5-10 years?
Man, I really, really like teaching through action. I don't like teaching through talking about the last play. Mm-hmm. I really am passionate about living journeys and teaching out of that journey in real time. Because if I can watch somebody say they want to do something, struggle to do it, teach the lessons of the struggle, and come out of it in real time and achieve a dream, I truly learned. Not just before and after picture, not just I had an idea, they told me no, and I got rich. Like, this needs to be a 6-9 month process of learning to truly help somebody. That's why just giving a 30-minute speech or a 1-hour speech, no, like, I want to live teaching. So I have to try, I tell people I have a dream, go out, fail, struggle, go through the process, report back from the other side, like, this is what I'm experiencing, good, bad, ugly, me, I'm going to try this, and then I come out of it, and everybody can be like, wow, I saw somebody do something, not talked about it, I saw somebody do something. So I think there needs to be a new age of teaching that isn't talking based, is action based.
Teaching through execution.
Bingo.
I love that.
Leading, like, imagine, like, at war, your commander in chief is just sitting in the back, you know, like, y'all go fight. Like, no, the best commanders, I'm gonna go up front and I'm gonna lead this charge and potentially sacrifice myself in order for all of us to be able to get what we want and believe in. So all of us are struggling with our businesses. We all want to grow. We all have things. Like, there's a lot of us that struggle with our weight. There's a lot of us that struggle with mental toughness or mental health. My next journey I'm going to do, Logan Paul just accepted the challenge. I want to learn how to be mentally tough. I do things, but I'm, like, able to, like, I'm just not strong enough mentally. And I look at all the mentally tough people of the world. Like, Andy Frisella or David Goggins or, like, the Iron Cowboy. And they're, like, badasses. But I'm not a badass. I'm, like, goofy. But I want to be mentally tough. So I came up with this thing for me to train and pass the Navy SEAL test. Because Navy SEALs are the most mentally strong people in the world.
That's just brutal.
So I'm going to compare the Eastern philosophies in China of mental toughness, which is more of like an inward, like mind like water, like Bruce Lee, mentally tough, and compare it to the Western strategies, which are more like if something's coming at us, we're going to beat it. It's like external mental toughness. And I'm going to translate back to the people what I'm learning about how to be mentally tough without me turning into an angry, rah-rah cussing. Because I'm not like that. Most of us aren't badasses, but we need to be more mentally tough because we're suffering from depression. And it can't just be, let me fight it outside. That's why I'm going to China. We have to find something inside as well. So I'm going to translate, I'm going to sacrifice, I'm going to go live a journey and report back through storytelling and documentation what I found out from the most mental.
And, like, that's why I don't like to attack.
Mm.
Is because, like, I don't have an on and off switch.
Mm.
Like, I have one mode and it's go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I stopped replying to, like, negative comments, like, negative messages. Like, I just literally unsubscribe,
yes.
block,
yes.
go away. Yes. Because if I go at you,
it's over.
It's over. I'm going to call your mom. I'm going to call your job. I'm going to get you fired. I'm going to have some stick-up kids to put on masks and go beat you up. Like, I'm not going to stop.
Right.
So I don't want to give all my energy to right. these people.
Right.
So, you know what? I wish you the best. I'm sorry you feel like that way. Boop, unsubscribe, block, whatever I got to do so I don't see your mm-hmm. stuff no more.
Mm-hmm.
And I unfollow people.
Mm.
If we got beef, it's not even beef. If we got this much animosity, I don't want to see your feed no more. Mm-hmm. Bye.
I'm the same way. Absolutely.
I wish you the best.
Absolutely.
From afar.
Absolutely.
You know? But the thing is, that's because I'm not mentally tough.
Yeah.
I'm not tough enough to even look at your feed. I need to unsubscribe because if I look at it, it's going to mess with my emotions. Yeah. And yeah. You know? So that's how I'm dealing with it right now. But I would love to be able to see people and just be tough enough to be like, Assalamu alaikum.
Me and my boy Wes were talking about this today. You're like, man, there's a trigger word that if you can survive this trigger word, you are truly mentally tough. And it's when somebody says to you, why are you so sensitive? That is a trigger word.
Everybody's sensitive after that.
And I'm like, if I can withstand somebody saying that, I'm really mentally strong. Like, because that is a tough one. Or calm down. Like, you know, because we're so passionate. But there's like mental toughness with like working out. There's mental toughness with how to deal with depression and anxiety. Mm-hmm. Like, these are things that truly beat us up. It's like somebody's fighting us. How do we handle it? Do you handle it like a rock? Like, I'm just going to like stiff up and like, oh, nothing can faze me? That's Western society. Or do you handle it like Eastern society, like mind like water, like something comes at me, I just flow around it, and I'm calm and I'm still. But when it's time for me to move, I just move around it, boom, back to stillness. You drop a rock into the water, it's going to move, and it's going to go. But that's why, like, in the Eastern philosophies, I'm very excited to learn if they suffer from depression and anxiety like we do. Because in the Western world, we approach things a certain way. So I'm excited to learn and then to teach out of it. And I believe that will be the new norm of teaching. We are going to experience the iPhone. And once we experience the iPhone, we'll never want to go back to Motorola or Nokia again. There's different types of teachers in the world. Who do I want to learn from? Somebody who's talking? Or somebody who is doing.
Love that. Charlie, I'm so grateful for your time. I know that we were supposed to keep this short because you just came from your event. And I'm so grateful for all your time. I know you got to hit the road and get rest. But you dropped so much knowledge. I have one last question. So the word disrupt in Spanish, it does not exactly translate the way it does in the startup entrepreneurial community. In Spanish, it translates to interrupt, like to break apart.
Mm-hmm.
So when you hear the word disrupt, what does disrupt mean to you?
That's probably the word that would describe me most. Record labels hated me. Record executives, they're like, oh Lord, here comes Charlie with another artist that we have to deal with Charlie. Because I didn't like the way it was done. And I was disruptive. And everything I do, I'm only happy. You know where disruption really comes from? It comes from a question I ask myself. And it's the simplest question in the world, but nobody ever does it. And this is where, like, innovation comes from. So, when we're coming up in the world and we want to be successful, we want to study how somebody before us became successful. So we're looking that way. And all my greatest ideas of disruption came from one simple question. What makes sense? Not what are they doing? What makes sense to me? And I'm guessing that's where like Uber came from. I'm guessing like this makes sense. Now that they've done it, it makes sense to us. But it took somebody saying, what makes sense. Like Chance the Rapper, for example, it's like, it doesn't make any sense to sign to a record company. It makes sense for me to do it myself. Mm-hmm. And then the Grammys had to change their rules to allow somebody to win a Grammy who's never put out an album before. And he won 6 Grammys. And that's how I won my Grammy, was with Chance the Rapper. But it made sense to him, and he disrupted, and he set a tone for all new artists. You don't need a record deal to be one of the biggest artists in the world. But he asked himself, okay, I'm looking at these record contracts. He took meetings with every single company. He said, this doesn't make any sense. What does? So disruption, for me, always starts with, hey, that doesn't make sense. This does. I'm going to do it my way. And then it opens up a door for other people behind me. A new day has begun. A chapter has started. That's disruption. And I want to be one of the most disruptive people. Before, I don't even know if it was recording when we were talking about ism. Was it?
No, it wasn't.
I got most
of that. You got most of that? So, what a great way to start the interview.
Man. I mean, we were talking about how you have this bell. Yes. And you have this book, and I was like, are you starting a religion? Because this just feels like an ism, right?
It makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. I ring my bell to attract more abundance. That a frequency came off of that. Okay? And all atomic particles ended up, if you study quantum physics, mm-hmm. are waves. They're not pieces of matter.
Yeah, they're waves. Felt it.
So when I ring an abundance bell, I'm sending out a frequency of abundance. And even though it sounds silly, it works. Mm-hmm. In my life, at least. I guess because I believe. If I doubted it. You know what most of us do when we dream of something? We're all guilty of it. We're like, man, I want to do fill in the blank. And it feels so good to think of it. And then our brain says, well, how are you going to do that? And starts thinking about all the things that can go wrong. And that's like walking on an elevator with your cell phone. The frequency was blocked. And you can't connect. Like, I could be on the phone with you having the best conversation in the world. You're my dreams. And I'm talking to them. I'm connected to my dreams. And if I walk on an elevator, calls dropped. That's those negative thoughts. Just blocks the frequency, which we all are, from reaching. That's why I say, I believe bigger, and everything I write in my notebook, it's already done. Time hasn't caught up yet. I'm constantly a delusional optimist of my finish line, and I'm sending frequencies all day long to connect to my dreams.
It's amazing.
Thank you, man.
Thank you, John. if people want to follow your journey, where's the place that they can follow along?
Two places that I hang out authentically. I like really care about authenticity. I really hang out on Instagram, and I really hang out on my podcast. Instagram is kind of like where I communicate, like with people, but it's limiting because I like to like express my theories, and I can't express my theories well on a platform like Instagram. So I have my podcast where I just talk about my theories and like things I'm going through in a long form, and I don't interview anybody, but it's my way of like, I've got stuff in this my head that makes sense to me, and I have to put it on record to where it could last for thousands of years. So podcast is where I just, I guess, preach. Like, I'm like a preacher in church, like just preaching my sermon, and that's how I treat my podcast. It's my keynote speeches every episode.
How many episodes do you have? 46,
43. 46. Yeah, all stories, and just everything is just story based or like theory based.
And you know, we were speaking about this earlier in the religion conversation, like, you're creating these things that then are bigger than you, right? So winning streak is a big one. Streak.
It's very important. Okay, so this is where it comes from. I study WWE wrestling a lot. is really good marketing. Like, the wrestlers are, like, massive superstars.
Look at The Rock.
Bingo. You walked right into it. Okay. Do me a favor. Impersonate, whether catchphrase or anything, impersonate The Rock.
Can you smell what The Rock is cooking? And I don't even watch none of that shit, but... but that brand, boy...
Do you smell what The Rock is cooking?
And yep, he's doing it. And he hasn't. And he hasn't even been on. He hasn't been doing that for like 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't been doing it for 20 years. I never watch wrestling,
mm-hmm, but you know it.
But I know it.
Impersonate Tony Robbins. You can't walk away acting like Tony Robbins. Impersonate Charlie Rocket.
I want a winning streak.
You can practice me and my philosophies.
The vibrations.
That's what she said?
Yeah, she heard it.
Really?
That's the vibration.
So there's somebody down the hallway in this hotel that just screamed, I'm on a winning streak.
Mm-hmm.
Because I create something that when somebody leaves my speaking engagement, they might not ever need me again. I don't want them to need to come back to see me speak. I would love to be able to unlock somebody and them never have to give me their money again. Yes, that's bad for business. But it's birthed in 2,000 years from now when I'm dead. I would love if my philosophies are still being lived out. I want to unlock people. That's why I teach people about quantum physics. That's why I give things that people can act like me. Little things people can do as well. Because I don't want them to need me. If they continue to need me, I didn't do my job.
No, it's like a superpower, the winning streak. I've just been walking around. I told you, Charlie, I love you. But I could freaking delete my Instagram account tomorrow, never see you ever again. And winning streak is going to be with me for the rest of my life. Something good happened. I'm on a winning streak. Something medium happened on a bad day, I'm on a winning streak.
That's right.
You know? And that's big, man. That's big. And I know that, you know, it's something that's bigger than yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's going to live long after you're gone. So thank you, brother. Thank you for that contribution to the culture.
It's my pleasure, man. Thank you for believing, bro. That was a great interview.